You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sevasodi. Many parental hopes are filled with ideas of soft laughter and chit-chat, growing intelligence and awareness of the world, watching as the life they brought onto the world begins to interact with the wonderful world and its diverse people. And so it can be very difficult for parents to admit there might be something unusual or different about their child who perhaps doesn't speak with others, unsmilingly refuses to make eye contact, or doesn't react to sound with delight, but with dismay. Those symptoms could be indicators of autism, but also perhaps just an antisocial child. It can be difficult for parents to consider that their child might be autistic, but in truth, the earlier the diagnosis, the better for the child and the family. And Joshabeth Jayasuriya Isaacs from the Early Autism Project Malaysia sits in with us today to tell us more. Welcome to the show, Jo.
Thank you very much, Mira.
Jo, what sort of got you interested in autism in the first place?
Well, I was studying at Curtin University doing my psychology, and part-time for summer I decided to become a therapist with children with autism. I didn't plan to make it a lifelong career, but during that time I was really amazed to see the therapy that they were doing and the changes in the children. I'd only worked after about 2 weeks and the child started to respond to me and really started to show improvement. And I think that really is the best part about our job. It's very fulfilling to see the children progress so rapidly and actually show all these changes. So then I kind of fell in love with it, and I just love meeting children with autism. They're all so different, and just it's just such a challenging but very unique job.
Right, and then now you've decided to initiate the Early Autism Project in Malaysia. You have been involved since, what, 2006?
Yep, I was trained in America in the fall of 2006, and then I came back in January 2007. Mm-hmm. It was actually started by Brenda Baim, a consultant from American, the Wisconsin Early Autism Project. So she started it here because there were quite a few families that needed the support and wanted her to start a program here. And so recently I've just taken over.
Okay, 5 years into the program, what have been your observations of Malaysian children with autism, the parents, the caregivers? What has been your observation?
Well, I think that autism is quite new in Malaysia. I don't think that there's as much awareness as there is in other countries, especially America. So I do think that initially a lot of the times parents do have difficulty really accepting the fact that there might be something different about their child, that maybe the child's not just a late speaker, but maybe genuinely there might be some challenges that their child is facing. So sometimes it's denial. Sometimes it's also a bit of the pressure on the academic performance and parents really wanting their children to do well just so that they can go to school and read and write, while we actually do quite a holistic program. So we want to work with the children to help improve their social skills and their life skills, their daily living skills. We want to make sure that they're all rounded, that they're able to do well in the community as well, mm-hmm. and not just the academics. So that might be a bit of the challenge sometimes with Malaysia. And obviously one thing is we don't really have funding for this sort of program. So that's probably the biggest challenge for Malaysian parents to really access this sort of intervention.
Okay. And you know, at present, autism is usually diagnosed in the third year of life. Are parents coming to you, you know, when the children are three, or are they older?
Honestly, in the last few years, I would say the last 1-2 years, we've actually started seeing a lot of children at a much earlier age. So we've actually started seeing children even before the age of three, a couple of them even before the age of two, where I think the parents, the generation of parents these days are definitely a lot more aware, and they're taking the initiative to come and see somebody the minute they see some signs that are a bit out of order or they're a bit concerned. They're straight away coming and meeting professionals. Mm-hmm. So we are actually working with children that are a lot younger than we used to, say in 2007, 2008.
Okay, but how do you know it's autism and not, you know, an antisocial kind of behavior?
Well, autism's really got three main categories of symptoms. The first is there is a language delay, or there is slight oddities in the way the child might be speaking. So even if the child has got an ability to speak, he may not be speaking very consistently. He may be speaking in a certain accent or a certain high-pitched tone. So there is quite a bit of a difference, or quite a marked observation in the language area. The second is the social skills delay. So you might find children with autism. And because, I must clarify, autism is a spectrum. So you have some children showing some more severe symptoms, while other children on the other end of the spectrum don't show as severe symptoms. But social skills would be another factor. And the third one is behaviors that are inappropriate, whether it's rigidities, whether it's rocking back and forth, tiptoeing, hand flapping. There's a whole wide range of symptoms. So autism really has to be categorized by all three of these areas, not just one. So if it was just the language delay, yes, we'll check hearing, and we still check hearing first. It could be any of the others, but when it comes all together in these three areas and with the forms and the ways that they do diagnose, then you can be quite certain that it is possibly or most likely autism.
Okay, so how do you diagnose at the center?
What we do is we have to use the DSM-4, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual that psychologists use. We also use the Childhood Autism Rating Scale, which has a series of 15 questions. So we actually interview the parents as well as work together with the child. We don't ever diagnose without meeting the child first and actually trying to do all these different activities and things, and to see if the child can respond to us or can respond to toys, can respond to play, interact, before we make a diagnosis.
So there's sort of an extensive screening process even before they start the program.
Yes.
How important, Joe, is early intervention? I mean, the brain develops rapidly from the ages of 0 to 3, as
yeah.
I just mentioned. But how important is early intervention?
It's definitely really, really important, because the brain does develop fastest at that age. So you will see the most progress. I mean, children are like sponges when they're younger. That's why we send our kids for ballet and dancing and musical instruments of all sorts and languages, because they can just develop it so fast. Whereas for me to go and learn a language now, it's like pulling teeth. It'll take years, maybe, you know. Whereas for them, it's so fast. So when they're at that age, there's also so much less skills that they need to learn. I mean, a child who's at 2 or 3, the language that's expected from that child compared to a child at 7 or 8 is so different. So there's just so much more that you can teach in a faster way at that age, and it does depend on where the spectrum the child is, but we do hope that the child can catch up as fast as they can at that age. So you're talking about less skills to learn, a quicker ability to learn. I mean, the chances are much higher for children when they're younger.
Okay, so it really depends, as you said, on the spectrum, which part of the spectrum you're on.
Yeah.
So how do you implement these early intervention programs?
Well, it has to be individualized, firstly. So we have to work, we can't just use a tailored, like a syllabus. So that's why you can't do it in a classroom setting or a group setting initially. You really have to do it one-to-one. The early intervention that we do is called, we do a therapy called applied behavioral analysis, which is basically behavioral therapy that is broken down into small steps. It's called a discrete trial, and it uses a lot of reinforcement. It's very play-based. It's very fun. So because of the individualization, you're working with that child's needs. What does that child need to learn? What does that child enjoy? What does that child like to play with? So one child's program to the other child's program might look very different, but initially you're always teaching them the first early learner skills, which is attention, cooperation, and imitation.
Okay, so the very large, there's a lot of tailoring to the individual child.
Yes.
Of the program.
Yes.
What is the expected or hope for the outcome of the therapy? How long is the whole program?
Well, the program can take anything, in our experience, between 2 to 5 years long. And it is quite an intensive program as well. So you're looking at children doing therapy almost 30 to 35 hours a week. So that's about 6 hours a day, because of the repetition and because they need that repetition to catch up and to learn and to hold those skills. About 2 to 5 years long if they can go through the whole program.
Okay. Do they attend school at the same time?
Yeah. Part of the 2 to 5 years program is that at some point, hopefully after the first 1 year, 2 years, we're actually looking at integrating them into school if they are ready.
Mm-hmm.
And then we provide the shadow support to make sure that the school experience is also a meaningful one and that they're transitioned successfully to school, because that's a whole different environment, different demands, and we really want our children to feel like they can do well in that environment.
Okay, so at any age that you come in, and depending on which part of the spectrum you're on, the program will be tailored to the child.
Yes, we will. Yeah, we definitely have to individualize it.
Okay, how successful has it been?
based on our research, 50% of the children that we work with who go through the whole program, who start early, who've got the intensive hours, actually 50% of them go to school like typical children. It'll be hard to tell them apart from the other children. I mean, you might recognize a few oddities, but in most areas, IQ, ability to interact, make friends, 50% of them.
Okay. And yeah. What if you have a more severe form of autism?
There's still a lot that they can learn. We definitely want to teach children independence. So you want them to be able to cope with life, daily living skills. We can teach them vocational skills. Teaching them the major thing would be to communicate. Because part of the reason why people think children with autism or people with autism are aggressive is really because they don't have a way to communicate. Mm-hmm. If we just give them a way to communicate, then the behaviors reduce, the behaviors go down. Imagine if you and I couldn't talk today and you just put me in this room, I wouldn't know what's happening. Obviously, exactly. I would react. I might throw some things around, you know, if you take away my only ability to communicate.
That's right.
So if we can give them a way to communicate, then that's the first thing that we want to teach at whatever age the person with autism is.
Okay. What is the role of the caregiver or the parent in this program?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. I mean, one of the key things about the success of this program is the family involvement. And in Malaysia, I'm really proud to say that so many of the families really get involved. You see mums and dads really sacrificing to make the time for the team meetings. They generalize whatever that we train them in. They do it in the home. We share back and forth information on a weekly basis so that we know what's happening in the home. They know what we're doing as well. Generalization to the community. It's so critical. I can't stress how important it is to have the families involved right from the start, because they can follow through on everything that we're doing with the children, and they can also give us insight into additional things that the child is maybe having difficulty with or started to enjoy a lot. So that's really, really important from the start right through the end.
Up next, we'll find out what happens if you sort of intervene at a later age on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon, it's The Bigger Picture and I'm Mira Sivasodi. With me is Joshabeth Jasuria Isaac. She's the Director of Early Autism Project in Malaysia. And we're talking about the importance of early intervention in autism. If you have a question for her, do text us. The number is 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us on @BFM Radio. Now, Jo, what about a child who is, you know, put into therapy much later? I mean, how does that affect the child?
What age are you looking at?
Say 7 years old.
7 years old, mm-hmm. Okay. We don't ever say that the child cannot be taught. We definitely can teach a child at whatever age the child comes. But at seven, we just need to be realistic that at seven, the expectations of a seven-year-old are a bit higher. They're going to school. They're able to sit in a group. They're able to communicate, have discussions, actually read, give you comprehensive questions. So the ability to catch up to that level may be difficult, but again, it depends on the child's ability when we meet the child and how fast the child learns. But usually we may not be able to catch them up as much as we hope to do so with, let's say, a 2 or 3 year old, just because of the gap already in the age. But there are a lot of things that a 7 year old still can learn, like I mentioned earlier, about communication, daily living skills, being independent.
Mm-hmm. So your youngest child would be?
We started before 2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But of course, the program is tailored very specifically for that child. So we would not even sit at a table. Everything would be on the floor, a lot of play-based. And you might ask, what does the therapy look like then? It's a lot of interacting with the child. It's a lot of engaging the child, getting the child to respond to us, laughing, getting the child to communicate and request for things that the child was not doing before. Doing games and interactive sort of play that the child actually starts to respond.
Mm-hmm. And your ultimate aim, you know, once the child has got language, is able to, you know, speak properly, communicate well, has developed those social skills which were lacking and has no longer got behavioral issues, they go on to normal school. And is that your ultimate aim, so that they are able to go to normal school and continue after that?
I think that, to be accurate, we really want to achieve the child's best potential. So some of them will go on that journey. Some of them may not go on that journey. So some of them, even though they've started early, done the full program, sometimes they still may not communicate verbally. They might communicate using pictures. They might be independent in a lot of skills, but they may not be able to be successful in a typical environment. So our goal is always to achieve the child to their best potential and to keep directing them to the best that they can achieve.
Mm-hmm. How do you prepare parents, Joe, to be realistic about outcomes? You know, I mean, as a parent myself, I can imagine knowing that there is a program, you know, you have a lot of hopes.
Yeah.
How do you prepare them to be realistic?
Well, we meet them weekly or on a fortnightly basis, and we're always talking through the programs, and we're talking about where the child is going to be at. And we have, every 6 to 8 months, we have our senior consultant come from the States, and they do a progress review as well. So parents have the opportunities for us to discuss long-term hopes for the child, long-term opportunities. And so we do try to gently explain to parents the direction that the child probably is heading towards, whether the child is looking like they're ready for school or whether we should be looking for alternative learning environments or groups. So we do talk through with them as best as we can.
Okay. So have you encountered parents who were unwilling to bring their children in early, you know, for therapy for fear the children may be stigmatized?
Yeah, we do definitely have that a lot. I think because of the lack of awareness, a lot of us don't really know what autism is, like a normal bystander may not know. So definitely people don't want to have a label or make the child stand out. And we previously we used to see a lot more children around the ages of 6 to 7 because they couldn't get into a school because it was too difficult. They didn't have the skills to go to school, and that's when some parents finally came forward and said, okay, I think something is not right, or I need some help for my child.
Yeah, in which case it would have been great if they had come much earlier.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. According to studies, one of the advantages of early intervention might be average gains of approximately 20 IQ points on standardized tests of intelligence.
Yeah.
Now, you know, how important is an IQ test, Joe?
Okay.
For a child with autism? And I understand
yeah.
many of them are terribly intelligent.
Yeah, some of them, yeah.
Yeah. I think where they seem to be lacking is social skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem to be socially inept. What's your take on this?
Well, I think the IQ test reflects the ability to cognitively process. So that does affect their language ability and their communication ability and their ability to learn as well. So we do use IQ tests to see their baseline or where they're at now, and then in a year's time how much they're progressing and how fast they progress as well, because some children might catch up 2 years or catch up so many points, so then you know that they're quite a rapid learner, and the chances for that child are a lot more because they probably can learn a lot more and a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say that is the only way to see how a child progresses. Definitely, like you mentioned, we also look at their social skills abilities and their daily living skills abilities, their community life skills.
Right. And say they've finished the program with you and yes. are still unable to assimilate into school and schooling life and stuff like that. What are the options then?
Well, if that's happened, then they probably haven't really finished yet, because we would still guide them the rest of the way if the parents want us to. In Malaysia, there aren't so many options yet, but I'm sure there are lots of NGOs and people who have started vocational schools. The best thing would be for them to start to look, parents would start to look for vocational type schooling, but we would still continue working with them for them to become independent and just be able to function well in their house as well as in the community, and to be people who can function in real life with their families. And so there's always support that we can provide, because even as they start to come towards puberty, then there's a whole different range of support that the child needs or the teenager now needs in terms of that whole area as well.
Okay. Do you feel the world's sort of, you know, really coming around as far as autism is concerned? I was delighted to hear that the Lion King production in the U.S. is now catering for autistic children, in that they're using less flashlights and
wow.
stuff during
yeah.
the production. You know, they have therapists on standby in case a child actually needs attention and things like
yeah.
that. It's fantastic. Have you sort of noticed anything in that sort of line in terms of recognition of children with autism in Malaysia? Or do we have a long journey ahead of us?
I think we have a bit of a journey. I think that with international schools, we've mostly worked with international schools. There's quite a few kindergartens nowadays that are much more open, but I don't think it's become yet a community, like everyone is in this and people are tailoring towards it. I don't think that people have started to do that yet, mm-hmm. but I definitely think we're heading in the right direction. I think we're in a better place than we've ever been before, in terms of awareness, in terms of schools being open, but I do think that we've got a long way to go.
Okay. And coming back to the program, is it home-based or is it center-based? You know, what is it?
Well, it started in the States with being primarily home-based, only home-based, and that's how we started in Malaysia as well. In 2009, we started our first center. It can be either, depending on what the parents prefer. Home-based definitely has its benefits because you're right there in the home. You can practice functional skills right away. In the center, it's also got its benefits because you've got other children there. You can start working on social skills. So there's good points about either, but you can do it either at the home or at the center. But at our center, we have a limit up to the age of 7 because it is an early intervention center.
Mm-hmm.
And if we work with children that are slightly older than that, then we just do it at home.
Okay, so the team comes to the house.
Yes, exactly. The therapists come to the house, the consultants.
Okay.
The whole thing becomes
great
at home.
Yeah. Wonderful. How do we get in touch with you?
Well, you can visit our website, www.autismmalaysia.com.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, earlier, Joe, you mentioned that cost can be an issue.
Yes.
What sort of price range are we looking at for an intervention program like this?
Okay, well, bearing in mind we're looking at about 35 hours of one-to-one treatment, 30 to 35 hours. I think kindergartens nowadays with 20 kids in one class, it's already 500 to 1,000 ringgit. So for one teacher to be hired per child, a majority of the week, that's a big cost factor. And then you've also got the consultation, supervision, and then the supervision of the consultation as well. So a range would be anything between maybe 2,000 ringgit a month to up to even 10,000 ringgit a month.
Okay.
Depending on how many hours you're getting, the quality of the services.
Okay. So to get in touch with the Early Autism Project Malaysia, that website again, autismmalaysia.com.
Yes.
Thank you very much for joining us today,
Thank you very much, Neera.
Joshabet Joyasuriya Isaacs, Director of Early Autism Project Malaysia, talking to us about the importance of early intervention on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9. The Business Station.